Good morning. Look who stopped by. It's Mr. Wilson.
Here
good morning,
I am.
Sir.
Yeah, good morning to you.
Okay, now what? I'm trying to figure out what your hat. I see an egret. Oh, okay, the marsh.
Yeah, it's
okay,
a
cool.
Arcata Marsh and Wildlife Sanctuary. You heard of it?
Yeah, I think we co-sponsored their event last month.
There you go.
See?
A wonderful place.
We sneak up on you every once in a while. And in honor of that,
yeah.
Are you ready for a why do we say that?
Sure.
Why do we say lay an egg?
Why do we say
Since
lay an
egg?
Since
you got a bird on your hat.
Hmm. Yeah. I don't know. Why would we say lay an egg? It seems like it. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I'm going to say it's kind of a dated term. Like nobody I know uses this.
There have been euphemism adjustments to it that we can't repeat right now.
What do you mean by we, sir?
Yeah, I know it. You even abridged that one. Did your sports team ever lay an egg? Chances are that it did. That expression sounds complimentary. When a barnyard fowl produces an egg, the critter is appreciated for its achievement. Not so in the human world, especially in the realm of sports. In the game of cricket, you scored a duck's egg if you had no runs at bat because an egg resembled the shape of a zero. What better way to express the notion of no score than to say a team laid a duck egg or a goose egg? It's no longer necessary, though, to make 0 points in order to say lay an egg. Any significant failure may evoke the expression that was once highly descriptive and self-explanatory.
Yeah. I don't agree with this. Is there a better way?
Well, I could have said lead pipe cinch, which is the next one, and you would have argued there's no lead pipes anymore.
That's right. See?
So tough noogies, dude.
You maybe got to update your book there, buddy.
I think that was a gift, Winston, 2 years ago?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Things change. 2 years, yeah.
Things change. Yeah. Don't we know? Things change in 2 years, yeah.
Old diaspora.
What was that about old guys hearing?
I don't know. I can't hear anything.
Well, it's kind of been interesting for a lot of us now that housing has become such a fundamental discussion point, mm-hmm. whether it's considered part of infrastructure,
yep.
which was kind of what I had been arguing for years, or just the recognition that, okay, Humboldt is actually expanding. Humboldt is actually a place people are wanting to come to.
Right.
And the last 18 months, we're starting to see the impacts of that in the real estate market.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at land use plans that the county has in place, or mm-hmm. then the cities within also, do you see what we'll be able to anticipate and be able to react to and accommodate these housing needs that now everybody is kind of understanding is there, or is the housing element something that's going to need to be looked at and really focused on in the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, we're always looking at it and focusing on it. I think the reorientation of this discussion is about where housing is relative to infrastructure, relative to, frankly, climate change. I mean, we have a housing crisis. It's connected to a climate crisis because where you live, relevant to and relative to where you work, and do all the other things in your functional day impacts your travel, and transportation is pretty much the largest impact we have on the planet with relationship to carbon and with relationship to energy use and those sorts of things.
Well, and when you get good weather, all of a sudden everybody wants to live there too.
Right, right. And then
so now we've got the migration component as well.
Right, but on a land use perspective, also what we've talked about in the past is it felt like it was so much easier to expand into, and it's really kind of a new form of development, a new form of living, the single family residence, what we would call the suburban style of development seemed very, when land was very abundant, you could grow in that certain way. But now we're also finding that sort of dispersed style of living has a cost in the long run, because now that housing is aging, the infrastructure that serves it is aging. And so when we're getting into replacements and those sorts of things, and especially with things like Proposition 13, which doesn't allow for, the growth of property tax in certain in these cases, and I'm saying it's a challenge.
It's
a factor, certainly, yeah. And because it's costing more to replace these things and the revenue becomes less, those factors in that sort of land use pattern are showing real weaknesses in that space. And then what's happening, what we've seen too, unintended consequences, now everyone's got their cars and all these places, and then your downtowns where you want to have everyone come to is crowded with more traffic and those sorts of things. So the reorientation of the discussion that we're seeing both in Eureka and Arcata, and I'm sure, you know, Fortuna will have that discussion as well, which is where can we best accommodate more housing? And doesn't mean, and then what I mean by that is, like, where do we put our concentration and effort? It doesn't mean like all housing is one style of housing. It just means like, where do we put our efforts?
Increasing the density. So isn't that kind of the phrase you guys use?
Increasing that density and looking that in balance with all of the other things that we're looking at, you know, lifestyle and the aesthetics of a place, which is relevant. But again, we're dealing with a housing crisis. And so that's something.
Now, one of the things that has been intriguing for me, and I don't know, you know, you may have spent some time here when you were a little guy, but that there used to be in like Old Town, the merchants lived upstairs and worked downstairs.
Right.
And now merchants are working downstairs and nobody's living upstairs.
Right. Big shift.
And I don't, not being a landlord in those areas, I don't know if it's because the codes have developed such that it's not profitable to have apartments upstairs, if it's a willingness or lack of willingness to take care of that when we saw the redevelopment agency disappear, if that took away the incentives. I don't know why, but it seems like there's a lot of second floors. I'm thinking the Old Town Eureka specifically at this point, that just they're not being used.
Well, we are seeing a shift in Eureka and Arcata for second and third. I mean, in Arcata, there's only a few places that you have that, but there is that shift, and a lot of those places became converted into offices and those sorts of things because, you know, the sort of technocratic sort of businesses in terms of office type businesses grew.
You need a desk, and that's it.
Those sorts of things grew, but we're seeing that come back again in terms of downtowns, and certainly in terms of residential development in downtowns. It's not just in Eureka, not just in Arcata. It's all over the place where that's becoming more popular. Not everybody likes it, but there's enough people who do that are willing to be in those spaces. And so it really helps relieve a lot of pressure on the rest of the housing market when you can actually, you know, produce a lot more units in a lot smaller of a space.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Hi there, and good evening, and welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Weekdays at 7 p.m., it's the Jim Bohannon Show. I'm Jim Bohannon. Join me here on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County Supervisor Mike Wilson. Mike, you talked when we were discussing in the last segment about housing, about conversions a little bit. And I'm wondering, with the change in demand or lessening of demand in retail space, not just in any one town, but certainly throughout the country, and the same with retail strip malls, regional malls, that kind of stuff. If there's going to be more flexibility in being able to develop living space in areas that in the past had been zoned retail or zoned commercial, is that something that is on the table? Is that being looked at, or is that something that might be a little too far along at this point to have demand locally to push that thought?
Well, I mean, locally, I'm not so clear. Right now, I'm looking at my phone as you're looking at me. And what I'm looking at is I just got an email from a legislative analyst from an organization called Civic Well, which I'm on the board of. And they were talking about a bill that's actually with this at the state level. I can't see it in front of me right now. But it basically talks about exactly that. And so the state is actually looking at that, at least some legislators are looking at granting those kinds of entitlements to conversions within those shifting commercial spaces. Because we are seeing in many places where malls and those kinds of places are actually failing. They're not doing very well. Actually, the downtowns are doing better. It's more popular to go into the downtowns now as, we're kind of shifting back.
Yeah, consumer trends are shifting. Yeah,
it's not just consumer trends. It's just culturally people want...
linked together.
People want those experiences. And also, if you look at like the Amazons and all that other stuff, the mall became less relevant and the experience became more, more relevant. And so a lot of those places are starting to like not be available they're available, but not be actually rented. And,
well, they're changing their stuff too, becoming playgrounds inside and some really unique things that aren't what they were designed for.
So there's legislation now that... is being looked at, hasn't passed the assembly yet, but it's being looked at to grant entitlements for housing in those commercial zones to get to start to create some of those opportunities. And they're even looking at places where if you're around transit hubs, the entitlements to convert into housing commercial spaces, second floor and above, that's also being talked about.
So right now
those things are happening.
Those aren't acceptable uses in those zones?
Well, part of the reason the state gets involved in a lot of this stuff is because local governance can be, I'll just say, a little slow to get to that place. That those processes can be quite long and drawn out. And quite frankly, local governance, and I'm in local governance, we can be very loath to have change in certain things.
Yeah, inertia is a lovely thing sometimes.
Yet, nonetheless, we have a housing crisis. Again, the state is working really hard to deal with that. That's why we had things like SB 9, Senate Bill 9, which allowed for ADUs. And so some communities, like in Humboldt County, I think every community is really embracing the ADU law. But in some places, they're really fighting it. Like in Mountain View, they created a... they thought, well, if we had ADUs, they said, well, it might impact mountain lions. And so...
Oh, so they're really scrambling trying to find...
Well, yeah. I mean, some attorneys basically shot that down. So that's not really an issue. And by ADU, I mean, we were talking about accessory dwelling units. We're talking about second units.
Mother-in-law units.
Mother-in-law units, which again, by the state legislation, is now by right. Like you... have that ability within certain parameters, and it really has pushed that forward.
Now, somebody was saying that I guess parcel of that is waiving the parking requirements for the additional square footage.
For instance, that
is something that I guess does have to come through the state.
Well, no, I mean
that allowance, or is that also part of the local plan?
Well, again, local jurisdictions are hard to, because they're so localized, and people want to fight about parking spaces so much that the state basically has said, "Well, we're going to remove that as an entitlement, or as an encumbrance."
Just kind of a broad stroke across,
right? And they do that by legislation, and there's another piece of legislation right now that's being looked at that within transit corridors, which I don't think Humboldt County qualifies. We don't have the population for that necessarily, but that there would be no parking requirements or parking minimums, so we call it, within a half mile of a transit corridor. And so they're looking at ways to remove
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, and if you think about Arcata 20 years ago, and think of the vacant lots we saw in downtown Arcata 20 years ago. There was one across the, there's one on two corners of Arcata Plaza. They were there.
Right, the old fires.
Right. And the reason they were never really built on is because there were these codes for parking minimums and parking requirements. And that made it so expensive to build on those properties, they just never got built.
Right, because you would have to pay the in lieu of fees.
And all this other stuff. And so when they removed those requirements, then suddenly the buildings were built. And what we're finding, just by the money, I mean just by the studies, that when we remove parking requirements... as much as people may complain about some parking inconvenience, the economy in those areas actually goes up.
Well, sure, the ROI is possible then.
Right, because it turns out that people buy things, cars, Not so much.
Yeah.
Right. And so and so again, it's like where we have these crises, it's like we have a parking inconvenience, and I'm empathetic to that. I am a person who grumbles every time I have to, you know, find a parking space and it's not necessarily convenient. But in an overall sense, the vitality of a downtown and a vitality of these spaces is less dependent on parking and much more dependent on the number of people that are in that space.
Well, I would suspect that if it became such an issue, somebody will put in a parking garage.
For instance.
And the marketplace would react to it.
And again, it's like when you have those kind of densities, looking for other transit options as well. Yeah.
That's true. They could be skateboard parks too.
Well,
parking, sorry.
There's some very interesting options, and we can talk about that.
It's 8:30.
Forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County Supervisor Mike Wilson. You're not running, are you?
No. I mean, I swim occasionally.
Yeah, okay. You stagger around every once in a while.
I ride my bike.
Yeah.
I'm good at that.
But you weren't up, yeah. You weren't up this time.
No, I'm not.
You reveling in that?
Running for office is both a big, big pain in the butt and sometimes really stressful, but there's... It affords you that opportunity to really connect and reconnect with folks.
Yeah, there's a little, got to be an adrenaline rush, otherwise nobody would run for a second term.
Yeah, I mean, it's got its positives and its negatives. The anxiety of that, it's a terrible job interview process, really, probably one of the worst. But nonetheless, and because you know your bosses are many thousands of people, and so you know you got to interview with everybody, and that. It can wear on you, but again, the opportunity to do so is, as long as you have some extrovert tendencies,
if you're a ham bone,
you can
it's
do
okay.
it.
Yeah,
it's there's
well, you know what?
So
I bet you in 2 years you're going to get the opportunity.
I'm not thinking about that then. Now, I mean,
yeah, the housing challenges, I think, are something that I can use. Our own little situation that we're playing with in looking to have a new house. Even just the choices. Look at faucets. Sink faucets.
Yeah.
You think, okay, you got this one, you got that one, you got five or six choices. We were at a shop. They were like, I think the gal said 230 different, and not for the bathroom. This is just kitchen sinks.
Yeah, and that's what the ones that are in that shop.
Yeah, and then you go to the bathroom side, there's about as many there again, and you know, let's not even talk about lights. It just is amazing the choices, but a lot of times you got to get out of Dodge to see the choices. So when you're out doing your stuff throughout the state and you're looking at other areas, do you get frustrated at the lack of some of that creativity being able to play out here, either because there wasn't an ROI, or because there was no market pressures for it, or maybe there's just nobody knew that was something that could be done.
Kind of. I mean, I don't know. I would say oftentimes I'm actually more inspired about what we are doing in this area because, frankly, like a lot of the things that maybe I think is like, well, that's really cool, I have to look around and go, oh, that's because they have a population base that can support whatever that is. And
the realities.
Like, yeah, it's like the mass transit and those sorts of things. And we have, you know, we're getting there in some spaces, and there's a lot of creative new ways. There's a lot of space between what a bus is and what an Uber is, and in terms of how you might move people around, and there's a lot of options around around that. And so for an area our size and for a space we're at, I would say in terms of like a lot of our energy policy and a lot of our housing policy that's coming on now, the new general plan for Eureka, what's happening in Arcata, those are very, what you know, some might term progressive. They're very moving forward planning processes.
Thinking about tomorrow rather than just today.
Yeah, and so and just, you know, what we're seeing coming out of the university and what we're seeing actually coming out of our land use policies around, you know, managed burns and those kinds of things. How we're a lot, we in this community really advanced, and we are in as much as we have those challenges, and as much as I'm like, oh, that's really cool in another place, and that's really cool in another place. When you go to these state and national, you know, conventions or conferences, you're going to probably see people from Humboldt County, from this very small place, this place of, you know, the size of Connecticut.
The backwater nowhere, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
But the innovations that come from this community on all those levels are really inspiring. So yeah.
As then we're trying to implement some of those changes, do the local regulators recognize the benefits, and or does the state folks, CEQA, do they recognize, as an example, you know, just one of those alphabet soups, do they recognize some of this creativeness, and instead of saying, by the book, they go, hey, that accomplishes the goal. Congratulations. Way to go.
Yeah, always challenges in that. There's always challenges because humans are just the way they are. We silo ourselves often. We get so in tune with what our issue is, whether it's like I'm protecting this species or whether I'm trying to bring services to this population. There is always that. And then, yeah, then bad things happen in the past, and then we write regulations or laws to try and write that or trying to keep it from happening again. And we can't predict the future, and then we run into the future when there are things that don't fit that model or that space. And the trick is, how are we nimble in changing that? And I'm going to say, as human beings, we're not as nimble as maybe, well, you know,
so
likes, but we're getting there, you know.
So is that
iterative.
The idea generators challenge to get the regulators to kind of loosen up a little bit and see it? Or is it maybe the leadership of the regulators to say, hey, guys, 95%, we're pretty close. You know, let's talk about that 5% instead of automatically saying yes or automatically saying no.
I mean, that's the inspiration of leadership in general, is to try and bring everyone together. It's like, I don't really look at regulators as the regulators. Like, I try really hard not to put people in.
Support, the representatives of the rules as they are.
As they are, because ultimately, again, they're put there to probably fix something or to probably save something or probably to, or promote development in some certain direction or whatever that
there's
may
a reason
be.
Why somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. There's generally speaking, it's probably from a good place. The problem is like it just that gets forgotten in these processes. And so you got to be trying to bring those things back. I mean, that's there is that balance. And so, yeah, I mean, I think we're getting there. And again, as much as I sometimes grumble about the situations that I deal with here and in my community, in this county or the state, when I'm on the outside, a lot of times I'm finding like we're really ahead on a lot of stuff. And so we're going to keep working on it. That doesn't mean there's not challenges. We'll get there.
All right. That's the incentive. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:41.
Hi, folks. Fly Humboldt wants to remind you that flying local is buying local. And with airlines going to several cities serving hundreds of destinations, it's easier than ever to get to where you want to go from Humboldt County's airport. That's right. You can fly on American, Avelo, and United Airlines nonstop to Denver, Hollywood, Burbank, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. Flying has never been more convenient or affordable. So book your trip now. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Mike Wilson. Mike, as you look at some of the different challenges, certainly wind energy, the green solar, and even if we stay away from the funding and some of the challenges that, you know, the PG&E is putting out there now and the buybacks and all that kind of stuff, and just look at these windmills as an economic generator for us.
Right.
Is it going as well as you were hoping?
Well, it's hard to tell where it's, you know, how well it's going from the perspective is, like, I don't know where we will be 2 years or 3 years, but in this moment, it's chugging along pretty good. I mean, we just, as you know, approved at the Coastal Commission for it's really a consistency determination. It was determined that the leasing process that Bureau of Ocean, BOEM, Bureau of Ocean Management, is consistent with the Coastal Act, and so they're going to move forward with their leasing process, which is these areas offshore.
Requirement for this project to have a chance.
And really, those leasing processes are really right now study phase. So they're basically doing those leasing processes so that they can do the auctions for those leases, and then that there's, you know, skin in the game for these companies and organizations to start looking into that. Meanwhile, in parallel, the Harbor District and Humboldt County is looking at, you know, the infrastructure needs for the peninsula to service that, you know, that offshore wind opportunity. And so that's starting to kick in. And there's a lot of infrastructure, and it's quite expensive to do all this stuff. Really, really expensive. But the trajectory of that particular technology is positive.
Still a positive one.
Yeah, a positive. Because even though, you know, we may be on the front end of it right here in this place, and the investments will be made that maybe won't necessarily pencil out in this context of just this one little piece, the expansion of that technology is why people are putting their eggs in the basket of this, because they already know 15 years ago that they were looking at offshore wind from that perspective of where they were, you know, stuck on the bottom, stationary.
Anchored.
Now we're talking about floating offshore wind. And these are much bigger structures, and they're floating. And so it's a newer technology. But once you get into that space, then the potential for wind, or the wind potential for energy, is the ocean, right?
How far out?
It's quite big.
Can these be? Yeah, I figure there's an anchor, right? How far down can that happen?
Well, I mean, right now, I mean, they have a few that are, I think they're about maybe 200 feet or something like that, maybe 150 feet in that zone. So, and I could be wrong.
So
I
it's
mean,
not super deep.
It's not, it's not crazy deep, but it's in that zone. But there's a lot of ocean out there that's what fits within that space that has a lot of wind opportunity around the globe. And so that's
getting that power onshore, is that a pretty simple, easy process?
It's just a cable.
Okay.
Yep. That's
and then whatever the facility is once it gets there.
That part's easy. The part that's hard for Humboldt County is once we have enough energy produced for us, is then the infrastructure to export if you want to expand on this particular location. And again, the way I would phrase it or look at it is like Humboldt Bay will be like the Cape Canaveral of offshore wind, in terms of the wind, the generators will be assembled in Humboldt Bay. At least that's currently the concept. They would be assembled in Humboldt Bay and then launched out Humboldt Bay, because again, we don't have a bridge to block them because they're quite tall. So you can't get them under the Golden Gate Bridge, for instance, because they're about that tall. And so those are kind of some of the issues you got to deal with. And so Humboldt Bay is just really uniquely poised to be that, not just for here, but to be able to launch those for both the Central Coast and possibly all the way up into Washington.
And it's bigger than Trinidad Bay.
It's a lot bigger than Trinidad Bay, yeah. Yeah, yeah. But again, we don't have a bridge, and we have a lot of space, what we call lay down space on the peninsula.
Construction area.
Yep.
Because these will be constructed more horizontally and then
stood up on a crane. But again, and the floats that they're on are gigantic. You know, they're 300 feet wide, and they're really big.
That does make it out through the mouth.
Mm-hmm. It'll make it
out. How much wiggle room does it have?
Well, they're doing a study right now. The Coast Guard is just starting their study about how to do that and what the parameters might be for that, and then we're going to get into it.
Keep them off the rocks.
They move slow.
Yeah.
Very, very slow.
Okay. Well, maybe they catch the tide coming in and going out at the same time.
There you go.
All right, bud. Hey, nice to see you.
It was fun to be here.
Appreciate the time. Look forward to seeing you in a couple weeks.
What? That soon?
Well, 3 or 4 weeks, whatever it might happen to be.
We'll see.
All righty. See everybody tomorrow.